This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And I want to say a special hi to my son, who is listening to me today in the lab. He is doing some experiments, and he was going to turn on the radio so he could listen to this program, because I said it's going to be a really great one, because I am talking first, at the bottom of the hour, I'm going to be talking to L.A. Chandler, who I met here at BoucherCon last year, and I'm really excited to be talking to her again. But first, I am going to be talking to an author whose work is, I don't know, you know, I get so many books, and I always am looking for that one book that I will get that will stay with me, that will not only just stay with me, but that 50 years from now, people will still want to read it. So often, I get books that they're absolutely wonderful books, but they get dated. Partly because of the references in the books that sort of wear on people after a while. They're not going to last. Sometimes it's just because the writing, although you read it once, you never want to read it again. But then you come across an author whose work is something really special, an author who has real talent, and so I think will last for a long time. And I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper, Anik, I hope I pronounced it right, Anika Rana? Anika?
Yes, that is correct, Anika Rana.
Anika Rana.
Thank you so much, Patsy, yes.
Well, the name of the book is Wild Boar in the Cane Field. And as I said, when I just started the book, I'm always impressed when I get to a book, I open a book, and I read the first line or the first, you know, few words. And so when I read the first line, my mother's found me a week after I was born. And, you know, right there, you caught me. I had to find out more about this story. And so It's always great when an author comes out with a line that's memorable and a line that really captures the interest. And so as I'm reading it and discovering the story, I was very impressed with your writing, your ability to really capture a place and a time. So let's talk a little bit about where you came out with this story. This story is set in the Punjab.
Correct.
And, you know, I try to expand the horizons of my listeners. You're reading one type of literature all the time. You're reading, either you say, I like cozy mysteries, I'm reading cozy mysteries. I like thrillers, I'm reading thrillers. I like for my listeners to expand their horizons, to look beyond. And so I'm always thrilled when I find an author who just tells a story set in a different place and captures our interest. And the Punjab is very important to us, but unfortunately, most people don't know anything about it. And I think all of, you know, books about places that we should know more about, like Khalid Hosseini, The Kite Runner, which I thought was, of course, brilliant. Books like this just take us to a place that we should know more about.
So, yeah, thank you for mentioning that. And thank you for mentioning Khalid Hosseini with my book. It's, of course, a great honor that you do something like that. And also all the kind words that you, you know, introduced the book with. Patsy, the book Wild Boar in the Cane Field is based in the Punjab, and the reason I keep it open as Punjab, even though I grew up in Pakistan, is Punjab was once part, is part of India and Pakistan, and it has a very shared history. And the experiences that I write about are experiences that 60% of South Asians experience, because 60% of South Asia is rural. And so even though the landscape might be slightly different, depending on which country you're in South Asia, there's a general similarity as far as the really basic way people live. But I chose the setting of the Punjab because of my own experience growing up in the Punjab and living in a village. When I was 8, my parents decided to move to the family farm. We had been living in England for a few years. And even though I had been to the farm, you know, as a child as well, and I was familiar with it, but living there for 8 years gave me a really a deeper perspective and a deeper awareness of the lives that people live and how everything that surrounds them impacts their lives and how they respond to their surroundings. So I have some really happy memories of that place, and I have some really raw experiences of seeing those lives there, which I wanted to represent in this book. And, you know, as you mentioned, for your viewers, what I find really interesting about the Punjab is that 100 years ago, it was not this rural oasis as it is now. It was, India was colonized, and, you know, in the 1890s, the British government decided to build this grand irrigation plan. And so what were jungles and, you know, really a lot of it was, you had natives living there, local folk living there. They converted this land to a farming area by building the Grand Irrigation Canal System, which was at the time one of the largest in the world. And I'm not sure, I mean, I haven't read about other places, but these canal systems created spaces and designated villages and towns. And that was the environment I grew up in, and that was the history I grew up with, which so fascinated me. And so some of the main scenes in the novel take place at those canal banks. Tara, the main character in my book, she gives birth to her baby at the canal bank. Bhaga, the woman that cares for her, her husband dies at the canal bank. So these waterways that are networked across the land are places of death and birth and re-life and so on. So those were some key thoughts I had when I decided to choose the setting, and I'm glad you appreciated it.
Well, I do, and I, of course, I appreciate the rural life. First of all, one thing in any rural community, and I come from a rural community in northern Michigan, but the people are in so many ways the same, although you have, you know, there are cultural differences, but there are the good people, there are the bad people, there are the funny people, there are the sad people, there are people who are helpful to others and people who always, you know, cause trouble. So it's in that sense, it's the same. I particularly with rural life in Punjab or in, really in many parts of Asia, the poverty is so much worse than anything that most Americans can imagine. You know, we talk about poverty, but most of the people who are really poor, they still have, you know, flat screen TVs. So we're not talking the same kind of poverty. But having lived abroad, as I have, and having traveled to rural areas of various countries, one of the things that caught me, I love in the book, you write a lot about food, a lot about cooking. And yes. And it is amazing that even you know, I know that sometimes, you know, the sanitation is not the same as we would normally expect. Oh. But the amazing thing is, I don't know why, but the food is sometimes so good. You can't believe it. It's just amazing, isn't it?
I totally agree, and that's why I have many of the scenes are in the kitchen. Those memories of mine of standing around the tandoor, which is, you know, lit with local, you know, it, just cooking bread daily, twice a day, you know, all those scenes, cooking on dung fire, making food in pots which are made of clay, and then every day every week you cover them with a layer of clays to keep them, you know, to be able to use them for a longer period. All of that cooking experience, the going through that process, and the food that, you know, comes out of it is always, I don't think I've ever had a bad meal, you know, when
I mean, this is the amazing thing. It was so funny when I lived, I would tell people, you know, the food is so amazing. And on the other hand, you know, if you didn't look around where the food, if you didn't look in the kitchen, when the food came out, it is so good. I don't know. It's almost magical how good the food is. And particularly, as you said, the fresh bread every day. You just don't get anything like that.
And all the spices. I mean, even the memory of the onions being cooked early in the morning, you know, just after breakfast, you know, preparing for lunch. And so as soon as one meal is over, the preparation for the next meal begins. And just those aromas and the tea with, you know, raw cane sugar in it, you know, it's thick and sweet.
That's what I loved about this book. I still do that. You know, I love to, after breakfast, I put on the onions to cook because I love that smell in the house. It just sets the tone for the day. So that was one of the things I really loved about the book. And as I was saying, you know, you capture the people so beautifully. The story of Tara is, you know, heartbreaking in so many ways. What do you want to tell people about the story itself? I don't always like to give everything away, but sort of what are the things that you want people to take away from this interview about Tara?
So what's interesting is when I started writing the story, you know, I was compelled to write the story, and I just needed to write it. Once you've written the book, you know, and people say, so what was it that compelled you to write the book? I feel what really compelled me was what you had mentioned earlier, that there's a basic lifestyle. There are not a lot of frills around what you're doing. So I wanted to capture lives of human beings at the very basic level, and the needs and the wants of these individuals. And for example, Tara, who is found on a train, and that first line that you mentioned, the reason she meets her first mothers is she is abandoned on a train as a baby, and she's found covered in flies. And but she chooses not to be a victim of life. She chooses to take control of life. And that was something I wanted to capture in this book, how individuals who might be put in, you know, a traumatic situation like that, how they take control of their own lives as much as they can. And then the interactions and the friendships that she has along the way, and the fact that she's not your typical heroine, as far, you know, even though we would imagine that someone who is found in that situation, we would sympathize throughout their lives, but there are moments where she shows a harshness which someone like her would have to show in reaction to what the world brings to her. And so I wanted to show that the whole human being, but I also wanted to show, and that first line was important to me because as a woman and as a mother and also as a daughter, I wanted to show this connection between a mother and daughter, even though I have no daughters of my own, but being a daughter of my own mother, this connection that you have over generations, and how there's this beauty also to childbirth. And that's the center of the novel, is the childbirth and the ecstasy around giving birth, and the continuation of generations that way. And so that was the intentionality around the beginning of the book, you know, of this concept of you might be born of one mother, but there will be others who will care for you. And, you know, and that connection that human beings make together. So, yes, I am sometimes wary in previous interviews. I've given away some of the key points of the books. But I do really want your readers to focus on the characters. Dara is brought up by Safia, who is the landowner, and Bhaga, who is her maidservant. And these two women also have a really beautiful relationship in that there's a symbiosis. They both have strong personalities. And again, neither one is really a victim. They're both supportive of each other, even though they are born in different classes. They find a way to support each other. To continue, Bhaga herself is a widow, and that is how she is cared for by Safia, who is also a widow. And they, again, are not, like Dara, they are not people that are victims of their circumstances. They take control. They do what they can to be able to respond to it. So my goal was, as you mentioned, you know, at the beginning, was have this story. It's not, you can identify it. Somebody who was reading it said, it was interesting. I noticed there was a bus and there was a TV. And I said, yes, because, you know, they yeah. are buses and TVs.
Yes, and that's why I think a story like this is important. It reminded me in some ways also Lavanya Sankaran's The Hope Factory, mm-hmm. which, you know, is set in India, of course. What I want my listeners to appreciate is that there is so much out there in the world, and it's so good if we learn more and mm-hmm. give us an understanding. Now, in the case, of course, living in the Punjab, we have this added problem, and I consider it a problem, of women and girls in general having a difficult position, because mm-hmm. I'm so... Absolutely, I think it's abhorrent that girl babies are killed in the numbers that they are killed in Southeast Asia. Well, in so many countries. It's just mm-hmm. horrible. It's horrible. And when you read these stories, when somebody reads a story about Tara or Maria, and they know the characters, they start to think of them as people, and then, you know, make them real, so that when we're talking about problems, we're talking about the world, we're talking about changes, we have a face to it.
Exactly. And I was very aware of the different audiences, of how this story could or would be perceived from different perspectives. People who grew up in Pakistan and India have connected with this in the way that they see what is so familiar to them. And they've connected on that level of the familiarity, and also of the trauma around all those terrible things that do happen to women in particular. You know, they are the most, you know, at risk in some of these areas. But also people of different class groups, different backgrounds, you know, both men and women who live very precarious lives in places where, as you mentioned, there's no sanitation, there's no health services, and so on. Yes, I from that perspective, I was trying to make sure that the people that grew up in that part of the world could see the authenticity of the story, but also open up the world, this place or space or time. It's kind of a general time. There's no specific time here. It's pre-cell phones, because now if you go to the Punjab, you know, you see a lot of people with cell phones.
I know. I have a friend who went to Africa.
Would be different.
I have a friend who went to Africa, and she said, everybody has a cell phone. Everybody.
Yes.
But from the point of the universality of your story, it's what we have to understand about human beings. And so I think you've done a terrific job with this book. It's your first book, and I always love to talk to somebody who's, you know, come out with their first book. And I know that you're going to have a long career in writing because you have the talent. You can tell a wonderful story. And well, anybody who can write about onions and make me want to jump up. I had to control myself when I started reading and I said, oh, I know that. I know what food I have to start cooking. But so it's this kind of ability that you have to connect with the reader that I think is fantastic. And I know that it was, you published through She Writes Press, and Brooke Warner was my guest the other day. And Brooke, of course, is part of She Writes Press. And so I'm glad that you got it published. I hope that it will get really good coverage and that more people will get out there and read this book, because it is a really wonderfully written book, and it is called Wild Boar in the Cane Field. And, you know, people just, you need to know more about the world. You need to know more about people and understand human beings. And I love that you used an Emily Dickinson quote at the beginning of the book. Mm-hmm. That was very nice. Now, do you have a website you want people to go to, or how do they find more?
Yes. My website is my first and last name, Anika Rana. That's ANNIQUARANA.net.
And the book is available wherever books are sold. And Anika, I think that one of the things that I really want my listeners to take away from this is that you are a bright new talent, and I hope that you know, it's not easy for an author to get out there and you know, get noticed. I don't know if you tried to get an agent in New York City. I hope that somebody over there will pick you up and realize that they have a great talent here. Are you working on your next book?
I am planning my next book. It's called A Sanctuary for Dancing Bears. It'll also be based in Pakistan. So.
Okay, well, I love the title, and I hope that you get really recognized for the talent that you have, because it's fantastic. And as a matter of fact, you know, I'm thinking in the, much like the Kite Runner, which was, I mean, that is a brilliantly written book. I'm hoping that maybe somebody will pick this up for a film, because it would be a wonderful film.
Thank you. I am planning to write the screenplay, because I feel the same way.
Well, yeah, as I'm reading it, I used to write screenplays, so I immediately, when I get a book that I see as a movie in my head, I know, you know, I think it's destined for that. So make sure you invite me to the premiere, because I really do think that somebody's going to pick this up, and I do a wonderful job of making a film out of this.
Thank you so much, Patsy. I really appreciate the time today.
Okay.
It's been great talking about it.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Great talking to you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Okay, we're going to take a commercial break. And when we come back, I'm going to be talking to somebody really special. Okay.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author? An artist? An inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
How many of you listening today yearn to write stories, poems, or novels? Each of you has a story to tell, or knows of a story that others would love to read if only you could put the words on a page. The many writers' clubs in the Bay Area understand this urge and would welcome any new writer to learn with them. So go ahead and take the first step to becoming a well-known author. Sponsored by the Pinellas Writers Club.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back. And now I'm going to be talking to somebody who I really have been looking forward to talking to. Are you there? Are you there?
Here.
Are you there? L.A. Chandler. Oh, great. Fantastic. Wow. Well, you know, I'm saying L.A. She's L.A. Chandler with an A at the end. So I, when you do this... Okay, I have to ask you, L.A. Chandler, the author of the latest Art Deco mystery book, The Pearl Dagger. How many pair of red shoes do you have?
Just oh gosh, I'm literally looking at about six right now.
Six. Okay. Well, it's nice. You can always find L.A. Chandler, or Laurie, as I like to call it, at any event, because she will be wearing the red shoes. And wow, I have to ask you this question. Do you know what I love about your books?
No, tell me.
Everything.
That's the best answer ever.
These books are so much fun.
Thank you.
I'm telling you, it's first of all, it's Art Deco. It's set in New York City, and I love books set in New York City. It's set during the period there after the Prohibition, during the Prohibition, just around that era, which is a fascinating time. And of course, your feisty, wonderful, wonderful main character, Lane Sanders, is the assistant to New York Mayor Fiorella LaGuardia. And everybody who's flown through that airport, most people don't know who he is, but he himself is a fascinating character. So everything about the stories in are fantastic. The settings are fantastic. And last time, part of the story was told in Detroit, where I was raised. And in the new book, it's partly in London. And everything about your writing, I love.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much. It's so fun to write. I love that era, too. And it always was such a surprise when I'd known more about the 1930s or 1920s before I started writing this series, but I was really captivated by the spirit of the 1930s. There was so much art and women in the workforce and beauty and humor despite the Depression, and I loved the idea of all of that goodness even in spite of dark times, and I really wanted that to come across, and I felt like Fiorella LaGuardia had that spirit. And so I was like, oh my gosh, he'd be such a great main character in a historical, you know, fiction series. So I'm so glad you enjoy it so much.
Well, I don't know if you looked at your Facebook page today, but I did. I posted on my Facebook page. I started with, I get a kick out of you. Well,
yes.
I
saw that. I loved it.
I actually was going to play the song, but then, you know, some of the words. Anyway, I decided not to, but I do get a kick out of you. And I thought, as I'm reading your books, that I always think of that I get such a kick out of these books, and they are just, they're fast paced. I mean, they're sometimes, you know, mystery stories can be a little slow, a little bit. But what I love about your books is they're fast-paced. There are lots of twists and turns. Of course, we have New York. We have the mayor. We have Lane. And we have her love interest. Oh, always we have, you know, something wonderful going on there. But we have all these historical characters that you bring in. And I'm not always sure that I want to tell everybody everything, because there are some surprises in here of people she meets. And this is my problem. I love the reveal. Because an author works so hard on bringing, you know, a reader into a story, and you draw us in, and we go back in time in your case, and we're there, and we're starting to meet these historical characters. Your research is phenomenal.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I love bringing in those cameos, because I feel like so many times we don't realize in history what else is going on at the time, and to bring in historic cameos, and they're definitely people that Lane would run into or could run into. It's so much fun, and it really brings an era alive when you hear these names.
It does, and these are names that we hear quite often. So it's very clever from a marketing point of view. From a marketing point of view, you have many, many clever things. First of all, you wear red shoes, so you're noticeable. You bring in these characters so that even if somebody's watching the news or watching something else, and they hear a name mentioned, we'll just say in passing, we won't say why. We might hear Winston Churchill. We might hear Orson Welles. They're going to think about you. Isn't that nice?
That's wonderful.
So you're very, very clever. And of course, I have to add that you have all sorts of wonderful things. I'm going to mention your website before we get back to the story, because I do want to say that, first of all, I was just up in New York not too long ago.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, nice. But nobody invited me to the book launching.
Oh, were you around during that time?
I could have adjusted my trip. I would have adjusted. Look, for a book opening at a speakeasy, I will adjust my way.
I love it. Oh, that's so fun. Yeah, it was so fun. There's a lot of speakeasies in the city, and I thought it would be fun to do something different for a book launch this time, since it's book 3. And, so fun. I'll take you there myself next time you come up.
Okay, because I spent 4 days at the Algonquin Hotel.
Oh, I love that hotel.
I spent so much time there, and I love the hotel. And on your website, you also have a wonderful story there, a conversation with Dorothy Parker. And so there's so many. This is why I said, I just love you. I knew from the first time I started reading you, I said, I get a kick out of this girl.
I'm so glad.
And I think they have to change this song, because the first line, I don't know, we don't want to put it anymore. But it has to. You have to actually have somebody rewrite this song. I get a kick out of L.A. Chandler. That's a better thing to get a kick out of than what is actually mentioned in the song, for anybody who doesn't know it. But everything about it, this story, of course, we'll just briefly tell the story just to intrigue people, but don't give anything away.
No spoilers. Oh, for sure. Well, it's an ongoing series that every book really can be read on its own. So you don't have to, if you're not a series person, you can totally pick up the book and I try to bring you in. But all of the mysteries actually are, they center on real life events that actually happen in the city, but the actual mystery then is fictitious. So what happens in this one is that at the time, slot machines were everywhere, and they were just total gambling devices, but they were in grocery stores and whatnot. And the mayor was really against them, because the gangsters, even in the 30s, were making tens of millions of dollars every year off of them. So one of the gambling machines at the time was actually pinball machine, because they didn't have the flippers like we have now, where it's actually just a game we play. There's, you know, strategy and whatnot. It was truly just a gambling device. There's no flippers. You put money in. You know, they did have the pinball where you'd pull it back and shoot the ball up, and if the ball hit a certain hole, then you'd win a certain amount of money. If not, then you lost it. It was a true gambling device. And Fiorella LaGuardia actually outlawed them for years. It wasn't until the 70s that they actually became legal again, but because of their nature was true gambling. So the gist of the story is that some gangsters have resurfaced from an old crime network that Lane is familiar with. And this is the racket that they're doing. And then they end up, Lane and her love interest actually end up taking a trip overseas to London to check out the source of this crime network. And in the meantime, the love interest, Finn, has to face some of the ghosts of his own past that he's alluded to in the prior books but hasn't really figured out. And so you have kind of a really fun subplot brought in there. And then they come back. So the mysteries always take place and are centered around New York City, but I sometimes take my crew on field trips. As you mentioned, in the Gold Pond, too, they were in Detroit. And then this one, they were in London. But it sure allowed for a lot of fun research. You know, they take the Queen Mary going out, and then the French ship, the Normandy, on the way back. You really get a feel for that era. It's really beautiful, even though it's sandwiched between the two world wars, and there's the Depression and the end of Prohibition. A lot of hardship and difficulty, yet at the same time, a lot of goodness had come out of it, despite that, which I love.
Well, I particularly love... I love the part about the ships. I have a particular fondness for the Normandy. That ship has always just fascinated me, and I've always I will read any book that features the Normandy in it because I love it just on its own. And of course, the love interest, Finn Brody, is a nice love interest. Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy.
I get a lot of comments about that. People really like him.
Oh yeah, we do. And of course, the notorious Red Scroll Network is just what we need. Mm-hmm. Agatha Christie had that network of in one of her series, and not the mystery series, one of her sort of spy series.
Right.
Yeah. Yes. It was the same thing. And I love things like that. And there are just so many things in this book that I love. And I just want to ask, do we have a book buzz ready? We're going to play a book buzz for you, okay?
Thank you.
Listen to this.
All right, I sure will.
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz mystery. Today we are chatting about The Gold Pawn, book number 2 in the Art Deco mystery series by author L.A. Chandler. I'm intrigued already because this novel takes place in a past time, the 1930s, and the setting is New York City and the outskirts of Detroit. Here's the buzz. It's November 1936, and Mayor LaGuardia's political future buckles under a missing persons case in New York City. At the same time, Lane Sanders breaks from her busy job at City Hall because she is ready to confront childhood nightmares. She summons the courage to face her past memories of her parents' vicious murder. One memory stands out, a dazzling solid gold pawn piece. She will soon find that the gold pawn will connect her past tragedy and the current Big Apple mystery. Will she and New York City's most prominent movers and shakers forge ahead into a new age, or is history doomed to repeat itself? Find out in The Gold Pond by L.A. Chandler in the second novel in her Art Deco mystery series. One thing you might not know about the author is that she is also a motivational speaker. Hey, this is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper. For more of my suggestions on the mysteries you should not miss, go to our webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com. And click on Book Buzz. That's radio-joy on paper. Rita Moreau, buzzing off for now.
Oh, boy.
I love it.
Isn't that cute? Well, Rita loves Rita is actually, she writes cozy mysteries too, and she loves your books, and she's going to do a new one this coming week for The Pearl Dagger. And and we're going to play that a lot. I like to play them often just to remind listeners about the books that I love. And in your case, I just love this so much. And, of course, I love the title, The Pearl Dagger. It's all of your titles are great. So one of the things, in you know, we met here at BoucherCon, and it was wonderful to see you and to get to hear you talk on a panel. And I do want to mention that I think your books are particularly in sort of they're old-fashioned in a way, because I think you have... Rita mentions that you're a motivational speaker, but I think also that you have sort of an ethics behind your writing. You they're the good guys and the bad guys, and mm-hmm. Sort of perhaps this is a little old fashioned, but I like it that way. I mean, I like to know where an author stands on something.
Yeah. Well, you know, Fiorello LaGuardia was really like that, and his spirit is kind of the cornerstone for a lot of this. I try to really stay true to what I think his personality would be like, and I have a lot of actual real history that he does. He's so funny, first of all. But also, he was full of integrity. You know, even when he passed away in 1947, he was only in his 60s, President Truman at the time wrote a letter to Mrs. LaGuardia and wrote that Fiorello was, I quote, as incorruptible as the sun. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is so refreshing.
Yes.
To write about, right? A political figure who actually was, and he's human. I mean, he made mistakes and whatnot, but his character was really incorruptible. And that's just so much fun to write about.
Well, that comes through in the stories, and that's, I think, one of the reasons that they are so delightful. You really have a passion for the character and a passion for telling a story. I'm so impressed with your writing, and I know that this is a standalone. This is called The Pearl Dagger, but people can go back and get the entire story, and I'm sure we'll have many stories to come. And you're going to be at BoucherCon again?
Yes, I will be there. I'll be at BoucherCon in Dallas. I'm actually coming to Florida in November, so I'll be not too far from you. I'll be in Palm Beach at Murder at the Beach with Charles Todd on November 15th. And then I'll be on the 13th, I'll be in Marco Island at the Writers Center there.
Okay, well, and I'm going to be at BoucherCon.
Nice. Oh, God, I'm so looking forward to seeing you
okay,
again.
Okay.
Wonderful.
It's going to be really nice. Last year was my first time, and I was so impressed with it, with everybody there. It was so wonderful to meet so many people, and of course, one of the things to meet so many fans. And I have the listeners, and they respond to the you know, authors who are on my program, and they'll write to me and tell me, and many times they suggest authors that I should read. But to see them, so many, you know, there were like, I think at this one, 1,000 fans, and they're there, and they're so appreciative of authors who tell a story that takes them, well, to another place, another time, or just... They learn from the books, and of course, with your, in the case of the Art Deco, wow, your research into architecture is something amazing.
Thanks, I appreciate that. I love that.
Well,
thank you.
Tell us a little bit about that, the buildings that you've researched.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the, you know, every time we think of the word Art Deco, even if you're not an artsy person, people know those words, and a certain kind of, you know, format comes to mind. And some of the favorite buildings we have, like that are Art Deco, are like the Empire State Building, the Chrysler Building, Rockefeller Center, Radio City Music Hall. But the most fascinating thing about those to me is that they all went up after the stock market crash. So well into the Depression era, not in the 1920s, when I think a lot of people thought that's when those buildings were built. And so to me, they stand for so much more. You know, they kind of came up out of nothingness and out of hard times. And a lot of the builders knew that would be what would bring the city back, is building. And I even have Elaine recount an article that I found where on the day of the stock market crash, the city is always alive with sound. You know, there's hammers and there's riveters. And during that time of huge amounts of building going on, the city is really loud. And on the day of the stock market crash, the city went totally silent. And it was like the city had died that day. And so when the builders decided, and a lot of them at their own cost, like for instance, John D. Rockefeller Jr. did it. He backed the loan to build Rockefeller Center himself when his partner had gotten out of the deal. That building alone brought in 75,000 jobs for the city. And so when the builders started rolling in again and that sound just hit the air of something being created and out of nothingness, it was like the city came alive again. And so I feel like those buildings represent so much. And we love them because of their look and, you know, they stand for New York. But I also think I think even when you don't even know about it, the reason that they mean so much is that there's so much history in it, and it means so much to the city and to the people because of that history.
It shows a spirit that we're going to keep going, and we're going to be strong, and we're going to make things better. And it's funny you mentioned the sound of New York. You know, I'm here in Clearwater, Florida, and it's pretty quiet. And so the first morning when I woke up in New York, I woke up at like 4 o'clock in the morning with the garbage cans. They started taking the garbage. And I was like, what?
What's happening?
What's happening? Exactly. And then it goes on and on, and it gets louder and louder. And I'm thinking, and it was so funny. I thought, oh my goodness. I've been to New York many times. Years ago, I used to go quite often, but I hadn't been for like 20 years. And so when I got there, and the noise, it is, and on the streets, noise, and everything was, and of course, it always building and always repairing the roads and all. And mm-hmm. I think that's part of what makes New York so much fun. It's that it's constantly vibrating. But it was funny, the day I came back, and I wake up early, I start working at like 5 a.m. and before the birds, and I have my window open, and I could hear the first little tweets of the bird. If that bird was in New York, nobody would ever hear that bird.
I know. It's totally true. You hear the first lovely clinking of bottles.
Exactly. Well, I want to tell everybody that L.A. Chandler is a terrific author. Absolutely. I think your writing is so, you know, when I say that an author's writing is solid, it means it's so good that I wouldn't touch a word. I just enjoy every minute of it. And the new book is called The Pearl Dagger, and it is a wonderful book. It's available wherever books are sold. And I want to mention, you have a wonderful website. And
Thank you.
What do you think I like most about your website?
Probably all the Art Deco and pictures on there.
No.
The red
drinks.
Of course.
Oh yes. You have recipes, and I love love recipes. And it was so funny when I was at the Algonquin Hotel, and of course they have, you know, the old drinks that they used to serve. And I said, I have to try one of these.
Why
not? You know, try a few more. But
yeah.
it's L.A. Chandler, spelled with a A at the end. L.A. is L, and then Chandler. And it is a great website. It's really nice. It has everything. It's got all your... You're getting really fantastic notices and winning prizes and all of that stuff. It's really great.
Thank
all
you.
The nice things they're saying about you. But people, go and get some of the recipes, because they're fun and nice. We'll try something off in Dallas. We'll see what they can get. We'll have a drink at the bar, and maybe we'll have a sidecar. How about that?
I love that idea. Those vintage cocktails were huge at the time. So even for my newsletter, when you sign up for my newsletter, I only send it out maybe once a month. but I always include a recipe for a vintage cocktail. And so I have a really high click rate of people actually looking at my newsletter. But I think it's because of those cocktail recipes.
I think so. So everyone go there, sign up for the newsletter, learn more about this wonderful series. And again, thank you so much for being on the program today. I think you are absolutely delightful. And I look forward to seeing you in Dallas.
Aw, thank you so much, Patsy. It was my pleasure to be here.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, she is so much fun. I like her so much. And clever marketing. I will say that it's nice when you have a hook, for yourself. And with her red shoes, that you notice her when you're walking around Bauchikon. And it's funny, so many people are wearing just flat tennis shoes or sandals, and then you notice her with her lovely high heel red shoes, and you stop and talk to her, and she's just a delightful young woman, and very talented author. So I hope that you will check it out. I think you will enjoy it. And The Pearl Dagger is the latest, and Gold Pond was one before that I really enjoyed. Anyway, Radio Rita will be here next week, and she is going to tape some more of these wonderful reviews that she does. And I understand that she's very excited about a new series that she's working on, and she's just editing the first book. And so I'm excited to hear what's going to happen. And so she'll be here, and I call her One Take Rita. She comes in, and she just does it so nicely. I also want to mention that we have, next Tuesday, I have Margaret George for the entire hour. I just want to talk to her about her wonderful books, Henry VIII, Mary Queen of Scots, and Elizabeth I. And she's just going to be here for the entire hour. There are very few authors like her. She's not only a brilliant historical author, she's just brilliant. Her research into the Tudor times is incredible. And so I'm really thrilled that she's going to be spending the entire hour. And then coming up in a few weeks, I'm going to have Brian Andrews and Jeffrey Wilson. And they are going to be here talking about their fifth book called Red Spectre. It's another in their Tier 1 series. And they are really fascinating guys, and I'm hoping that one or the other, either Brian or Jeffrey, will come here to the studio, because they're just absolutely fun to talk to. And what else? Okay, remember, go to my webpage, radio-joyonpaper.com, and you can send me a message about an author you want me to invite on the program. And remember what I always say. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're really lucky, to hear those words. Oh, and they are magic. Lights, camera, action. And your book will be turned into a major motion picture, a streaming video, or if you're lucky, a series on the Hallmark Channel. Whoa, wouldn't that be wonderful? And they need a new series, because I've seen all of them over and over and over again. So, also, say something nice to somebody today, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you so much, Ed. I really, really had a wonderful day, and everybody have a wonderful weekend. Bye-bye now.